What can we take from this performance?
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
How much she enjoyed that goal, a little bit too much in terms of... I wasn't a big fan of the Ronaldo celebration.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
You're welcome back. 12 minutes past 8 on this Monday morning. It is time to look back on the weekend's Premier League action. Mark Lawrenson is with us. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's start with Manchester United, the Ranić revolution. Did we see the first signs of it yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good appointment. And it was so obvious that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they didn't have an identification the way they were playing Manchester United at all. It was kind of get out there and sort it out between yourselves. And, you know, even at the highest level, which there are, you need some direct direction. And I think he'll give it to them. I mean, they sort of played a 4-2-2-2 yesterday, kept a clean sheet, won the game. Which also obviously helps Ranić because they're on the training ground. You know, players are more inclined to listen when you're winning. So, and no, I think it's a sensible appointment as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if it gets extended.
Is it as simple a thing as the players providing a better body language, showing more energy that can transform, say, a team without the ball? Because I guess there's two elements to that. Is it how they're being instructed? Is it the actual tactical approach to pressing, or is it the actual application from the players? And it seems that things have changed, or things were so apparent so quickly yesterday after, what, one training session, that there must be a little bit of both to this story.
Yeah, no, there is. There is. But it just shows you that, you know, players, even today's players, they want direction, you know. And the thing about football nowadays, especially in the Premier League, that, you know, you can bring players in and show them what they've been doing in games, you know, what's good and what's bad and all those kind of things. I mean, they send them DVDs to look at and everything. And it would just appear that, nothing against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but he was, you know, this is the way I want to play. You know, we're all good players. It's a bit like, it felt like it was a bit Manchester United of old, where they just went out and played. But obviously, they didn't, because Fergie was, they were sort of 4-4-2 generally. But within that, they had lots of license. And I think it just, see, nowadays with players, they want to be told absolutely everything, you know, where they should be when they're attacking, where they should be when they're defending, all those kind of things. And if you think about it, it's really, really good then, because, you know, the manager will say, oh, actually, I told you to be X and you're not being X, so, you know, sort yourself out and get in there. And I think it's very easy, really. But as I say, they just, you know, every time Manchester United play, you couldn't actually decide how they were playing, as in formation or tactically.
He had a bit of a laugh afterwards about Fred scoring off his right foot. Like, I mean, maybe he's like getting in on the joke that everybody was in on, that Fred is actually a good footballer. But it's not really a joke, is it, Mark? This guy is actually a talented footballer who was potentially underutilised or utilised in the wrong way for the last few years. He seems to be poised to have a bit of a breakout few months.
Well, that'll be it, because, I mean, that, you know, straight away he'll get the confidence. I think they all will as a team. Obviously, keeping a clean sheet is important, but he's not suddenly become a bad player, Fred. He's one, obviously, who needs channeling. And he must look at Ranić and think, yeah, you're the man for me. So it remains to be seen. Obviously, it's only one game and it's a good start. And as I say, keep saying about, especially the clean sheet, because they've been so porous in games, as everybody knows. But he's got something to build on, most definitely. And I just think you'll see a different Manchester United now. And I'm pretty sure they'll finish fourth, even at this stage, just before Christmas.
Yeah, we were having that chat a little bit earlier on about who's actually going to be the threat to them. And I guess when it comes back to the formation that you mentioned there, the 4-2-2-2, like Telles and Dalot, I mean, is it their positions to lose at this point when it comes to the wing-backs, as Ranić described them yesterday?
Yeah, I would say so, because he's chucked them in, hasn't he? He's had a look and seen what way they've been playing. And he'll have viewed many of much of the footage from the last 3 months or so, and he's just gone, okay, I'll start with those two, and it's your position to lose. So he's, you know, all these teams are big teams. Competition for places just spurs people on, and when you've suddenly got a new manager, and actually you as a player think he's got lots of confidence in you, it makes a heck of a difference.
Can I just tease that out a little bit, Mark? There's obviously the difference between the new manager bounce, which, you know, we see a lot of managers get, but there's then also the difference in a group of players suddenly being told what is expected of them. So are we going to see both from Rangnick? That actually we had this very talented squad who were kind of given not very much by way of instruction. Go out and express yourselves, get the eye of the tiger, go and be Man United. It's in your DNA. Yeah. Versus what you were saying, you know, you're going to stand in this position and that's going to create space for somebody else. And then, you know, there's two aspects.
Yeah, I'm absolutely both. I think, you know, I mean, we're not the brightest of people genuinely as footballers. So you always want direction, always, always, always. And obviously you want your manager to believe in you as well. But it's really, really simple when you think about it. He's obviously come to the training ground and he's gone, okay, you know, this is the way we're going to play. And he's only, has he had a session, a day and a half, possibly? But he's obviously got the message across. And I know it was only Crystal Palace and all that kind of stuff, but he's got the message across that I think they'll just kick on. And if you walk in there, into Carrington this morning to that training ground, there'll be a completely different sort of aura about the whole place. And I would think the players are looking forward to playing for him.
I suppose the other thing we find out now is how good the players really are. Like, are they the fourth or fifth best squad, or are they actually good enough next season with maybe one or two additions to compete at the very top level? I'm not sure they're at that level yet, are they?
No, they're not at that level yet because they've also been terribly inconsistent, haven't they? But, you know, it's like anything. A new manager comes in and if he does well, which we think he will do, and they start to win loads of games, then obviously, he'll start to buy players and he'll buy players to fit the system. I think that's the important thing from his point of view. And because when you look at the managers they've had previously, the last three or four, they would say relatively unsuccessful. And I think you'll just get this kind of different mechanics in the way that they play football. But also, I think you'd be very aware as well that I know they always say Man United have got to play a certain way. Well, I think the thing with that is Manchester United need to win every game, like Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea. And I think he'll bring that. I really seriously will. So I don't think they'll be pushing and pushing this year in terms of the top three. But next year or next season, I think they'll be completely different.
My last one on this, right? The manager was kind of, or the process was criticised immediately. And I said, oh, another interim manager, what are they doing? But actually, Rangnick managed to nip that in the bud when he said, well, who knows, maybe I'll recommend myself for the job. Because there was some fear that maybe he'd be a bit of a lame duck and that the players might start playing for a move away. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, this guy's sticking around. I can't really phone it in.
Well, you only need to listen to the likes of Klopp and other people that have either been coaching with him, played for him, all those kind of things. I mean, Klopp said straight away, you know, beware. The Premier League needs to beware because he's in. And he's, you know, I think the fact straight away he didn't dawdle about it. Manchester United, crikey, biggest team in the world. Those were his words, not mine. So why wouldn't you buy into that? No, I think it'll be good for Manchester United. It's just taken him an awful long time to actually get there. But as you know, I mean, in terms of the recruitment, they've been very, very average. They've just bought players who they think, oh, yeah, let's go buy him. And sometimes he looks at players they bought and he thought, well, where are they going to fit into the system? And they basically didn't. You won't get that with this guy. It'll be very methodical because, you know, that's the way the Germans are, aren't they? Not being stereotypical. So, you know, I think that's the way they are.
He sounds like the type of guy who should be trusted with a few transfer windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? And, you know, he's been all over the place in terms of managing and stuff and coaching. So he's seen every sort of tactical manoeuvre you could possibly ask about. I think one of the best things will be, and you can get it from the calmness straight away, that he'll be able to deal with players. And he probably won't even scream and shout, apart from the odd occasion when you really need to. But I think very much he seems to me as a manager will just sit people down and go, look, you know, this is what we're looking for, and I don't think he'll make any enemies there. So I think the squad will be a happy one, although of course if players all of a sudden who had started under Ollie are not starting under Rangnick, then that's a little bit different. But he'll even deal with that, you know, and go back to Klopp again and that's what he does. I mean, how he keeps that squad happy, I've absolutely no idea. I mean, you know, look at Origi on Saturday. Mm. You know, he starts a game, he comes on and wins a game for them, and he seems happy as Larry.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible man management, like we were making that point earlier on.
Well, I think Rannick's got that. Yeah. I think he really has got that, and I think he's got this calmness about him as well.
Just one last thing on Manchester United. And are you still looking at Lindelof and Maguire, the starting partnership, yesterday and saying that's a disaster waiting to happen? Or did you see, granted it's only one game, did you see enough changes yesterday that they'll get the required protection for them to not be such a liability as a central defensive partnership?
Well, they've had loads of protection, haven't they? Because Manchester United, I mean, Carrick took over very briefly. He played three holding midfield players in front of them, you know, the back four. I think they made lots of mistakes. The two fullbacks, Wan-Bissaka and who was the left back? His name escapes me now. Who didn't play on at the weekend?
Sure.
Of course it is. They've really, really struggled, and they've struggled defensively. They might be fine going forward, but look, you're a defender. You've got to defend, and I think it was a little bit of a case of just sitting people down and going, you know what? You're not a unit. You know, the four of you are just not a unit. Sometimes it was five. And ages ago when I came on one of your programmes and they signed Varane, I just said to you, I said, look, the thing about that is he gets injured an awful lot of times, an awful lot of times. You know, he's a really, really good player. So they have to make a decision. But again, you know, Lindelof and Shaw, I think they will improve. I think the whole team will improve. Whether they're good enough at the very top, at the elite level, as a pair, remains to be seen.
Let's move on to some of Saturday's action then. West Ham beating Chelsea 3-2 was an extraordinary game. I think it does seem reasonable for Chelsea to point to maybe some of the injuries in midfield for a reason why they haven't been amazing over the last little while. But at the same time, they spent an incredible amount of money, and I don't think anybody will have one iota of sympathy for that argument at the moment. So is that why things have gone on a little bit of a dip for Thomas Tuchel over the last little while, or is there a greater malaise here?
Well, no, I don't think there's a greater malaise, but it happens to all teams. They have a little bit of a downtime, if you will. And I mean, you know, go back to Liverpool, drawing at home to Brighton, drawing away to Brentford, losing at West Ham as well. You don't suddenly become a bad side. I looked at them. I mean, Lukaku came on, didn't he, eventually? And you're looking at him and you're kind of saying, well, if he can come on, why doesn't he start him? And I know you're on about the midfield players and stuff, but they've got two players for every single position. They just had a really good run and now they're having a little bit of a dip, but they'll come back and Lukaku will start scoring. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I still think they're arguably, for me, that the favourites to win, because they will get stronger.
For sure. The West Ham side of things obviously is one of the stories. Like, I mean, I think we had...
The goalkeeper's not been good, has he? His decision-making at the moment is not good, to say the least. I mean, he was really, really fortunate against Watford, wasn't he? But he's just started to make mistakes. But, you know, that's a position which I think is the most difficult position in football, goalkeeper, because, you know, when to come and when not to come and all those kind of things in a sort of split second is very, very difficult. And also, he looks to me like he's a little bit bored, Mendy, and he wants to join in, which I remember a certain person we used to play with who was a bit like that. But, you know, he'll get it eventually.
Feel free to throw him under the bus, whoever that is.
Hey, Brissy. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I was with him yesterday, but listen, he turned out to be a top goalkeeper. He was thrown in, only at Liverpool, because Ray Clements left. They didn't have a goalkeeper and threw him in straight away. And normally, in those kind of years, you'd have a year or 18 months in the reserves just to learn, you know, not just your trade, but also in terms of how you play with the rest of the players. But he turned out to be a top, top goalie, Brucey, but just a complete nutter.
The other thing is that, like, we were speaking to you a few weeks ago, I think it was, Mark, and you weren't invested in this idea that West Ham were going to get top four. I think it's fair enough when you look at United and possibly Spurs on their rise over the next little while. But what is the sustainable ceiling for this West Ham team?
I would think top six sort of for West Ham. I mean, he very much seems to pick the same team every week, Moisey, as much as he can. He trusts his players. I've told you before that, you know, they work unbelievably hard. They're a great bunch, etc. But you just worry about I'm told he'll get his hamstring, his normal hamstring, etc. And I mean, the interesting thing will be what he does in January, because if he goes knocked on the door of the two owners and says he wants this and whatever, he'll probably get it. I would think. Obviously, he's trying to get Lingard, but then won't everybody try and get Lingard, because at the end of the season he's free, and I don't know what you'd have to pay for him in January, but I think he'd try and get him most definitely, and maybe a couple of others. And then I think only then could they possibly sustain the fact of getting anywhere close to the top four for me.
Hmm. Is there ever any danger that Moyes gets picked up again by a bigger club, Mark? Because it does seem that the reputation has been well and truly fixed at this point, and it's just getting enhanced as they get more and more of these wins.
Yeah, but if you look at that realistically, I'm not, where does he go? What top club?
Fair.
I mean, you know, he says all the time that the owners have been great with him. Whatever he's asked for and they promised, he gets. He loves it, and so he loves the players. He just loves working with players day in, day out. And I just think that the number of games ultimately that they'll play West Ham with playing in Europe and stuff, well, they'll just get one or two more injuries. And, you know, as we know, the squad isn't that deep at the moment. But maybe in January, it completely changes.
Can we talk, sorry, about Origi? Because you mentioned him a little bit earlier on. What's going on? Like, why is he still there? Why is he still able to contribute? And why is he not just decided, right, I'm good enough to be the main man somewhere?
Well, maybe just one of those guys who you get who's he's on really good money, great. He's fit, you know. Doesn't get injured because he hardly ever plays. Maybe he just loves the fact that, and he's not bothered. I tell you who's like that, Matip. Joel Matip is his parents are extremely well educated and everything. The lads tell me that he's not particularly a football fan or, you know, mad on football, and he just goes out and plays it because he can. So you do get players like that. And the thing with Origi, he's got like celebrity status there, isn't he? Because the number of games he's come on and changed again by scoring. But whenever he starts, I tell you, it's a bit like David Fairclough. Remember Super Sub? And David Fairclough would come on and score for fun. When he started games, it was never quite the same. It was though he just needed that last 20 minutes, half an hour, where teams were tiring a little bit because he was rapid. He was very, very quick. He just needed that, and that was like the confidence to go on there and score a goal. And Origi's probably a bit of a modern-day version of him.
And is it Klopp's greatest triumph? I mean, apart from winning the Champions League and the league after a long drought, but to keep players like him happy and to keep them contributing, that to me seems the most difficult part of this, because giant egos, loads of money, jealousy, all that kind of stuff that like exists in every workplace, but it's just magnified when you're playing for Liverpool. And
the first thing is he'll be on big money, won't he? Which is, you know, good luck to him. So that'll make him happy. He obviously likes living on Merseyside, and as I say, it's just that way. I mean, Klopp. I remember one of the players. I can't remember who it was now. Benteke. When Klopp had only been there a few weeks, and I think Benteke eventually got moved on. And Benteke said something that really struck me about Klopp. And he said, he's your friend. He said, but he's not your best friend. And I thought that was a really, really kind of good statement. And if you see him around the training ground, he's always arm around players, talking to players, all that kind of thing. And I think he's very, very clever at kind of diffusing, you know, guys who are not happy. And I think in the end, it's one of those, isn't it? Everyone knows about the fact, you know, players used to go in the manager's office and say, I'm going to go have a row with him. And then they'd come out and say, he's told me I'm absolutely brilliant and I'm getting a rise and doing whatever, but he's still not in the team. And it's a bit of bluff, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, it's working.
Mm.
Is there a bang of 2019-20 off this Liverpool team? Late winners now starting to happen?
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, you know, All the top teams should score late winners, shouldn't they? Because what happens is eventually against teams, you just wear them out. And defensively, the teams you play against just lack a bit of concentration, one mistake, and we've seen it loads and loads of times. And of course, the problem is that they've scored so many goals in so many games, as everybody's seen, that all of a sudden when you have a really tight game and it's a 1-0 at Wolves, it's like, oh, but listen, you only get 3 points no matter how many goals you score if the opposition don't score. So it won't bother Klopp. And I think you quite like the fact that they kept going. And, you know, for a team that's obviously so good going forward and defensive now sorted out all the problems, I mean, I bet they were cock-a-hoop in that dressing room when they all came in. You know, rather than, you know, beat someone at home 4-0, 5-0, all that kind of stuff. I bet on Saturday when they came in at 5 o'clock, I bet it was all high-fived and all that kind of stuff. Because it was very, very difficult because Wolves played extremely well and stopped them. But in the end, they found a way to do it. And that's what you've got to do.
Yeah, the touchline celebrations were wild. Klopp was like, hugging whoever was closest to him and shaking them for all they were worth. Can I ask you, Mark, about the situation at Everton? Obviously, a dire performance in the derby. The camera cutting to Bill Kenwright sitting there, and two down from him was Marcel Brands. Marcel Brands won't be there anymore. It's going to be it's the Rafa show. So was that? Do you think it was a power struggle? Is that how that works? Rafa says this guy set me up to fail. I need to be in charge of everything.
Well, the thing about that is, but I mean. They only spent 1.7 million, didn't they, because of financial fair play. So, and Rafa knew that. And, you know, all the supporters know that. I really don't know what they're expecting. So, I think Rafa will be fine. And I think they'll back him. I don't know whether how long the financial fair play thing actually lasts for. Can he go out in January and spend money? I would imagine and assume that he probably can. And that's. I think then you've got to look at him and see what his team is. I mean, all the Liverpool fans were calling him Agent Benitez, weren't they, after the game on Wednesday night. So, look, he's a good manager. It's just one of those, isn't it? It's, you know, should you go and manage your rivals when you manage them originally, team? So I think it's just the way that football is. But now, probably with him, he's, you know, if you got rid of Brands, and he's now thinking, right, I'm in control of this, so good luck to him. Bill Kenwright's a good guy, you know. He's a proper Evertonian. And, you know, he just wants the best for the team, basically. I don't know about the owner. I don't even know if he goes to the games. But Bill Kenwright's still a very powerful voice at that club.
And this is good news for Rafa in the long run then, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think he'll back him. I mean, I know him quite well, Bill Kenwright, only because when Moisey was there, you know, as you know, he's my mate. I was with him on several occasions, and he understands football, and I think he understands people. Generally, he's done a really, really good job. So I think he'll just hopefully let Benitez get on with it, basically. As long as he don't improve too much, it'll be fine.
Fair enough. And what about Steven Gerrard up against Brendan Rodgers? That was plenty of off-field narrative. It turned out that the on-field narrative was that Leicester aren't very good at defending set pieces.
Yeah, and they've had a sluggish start, haven't they? Which they, you know, teams always will have that, and they've got a few injuries. But it just shows you with you know, I mean, Dean Smith didn't really do a lot wrong at Villa. If that fifth game, where he got the 50 seat, if he'd won it, I bet he'd still be in a job. But it just shows you somebody else comes in, different voice, different ideas, same players. What are they, 9 points from 12? You know, so, and I think Stephen's quite cutting edge. You know, he has a defensive coach. He has, I can't remember the name of the guy who does most of the coaching. It's not Stephen. Although obviously he oversees everything, and apparently, you know, this guy's really, really good, and all of a sudden he's getting a tune out of them, isn't he?
You think he's going to be good in the long run?
Well, you just never ever know, but I would think so. I mean, with the other thing where he's going to be fortunate at Aston Villa is Christian Perslow was at Liverpool when Stephen was there, so they already had a relationship. So if he'd been, you know, where Dean Smith got into this, you know, played for, lost for, whatever, I think Stephen would be all right because he would get the serious backing of Christian Perslow. So he's always going to have a chance. But I think players will relate to him as well. And I'll tell you now, he's probably the best player on the training ground. And that sometimes is really, really good because the players look at him and think, crikey, how good is he? So, and he's setting the standards for them.
Mark Lawrenson, great stuff. Thanks a million for being with us this morning.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Thanks a million.